UEG Talks, gastroenterology to go. Welcome to our GI podcast. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agla, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational and hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We're very happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. So today we're talking about the roads and off-roads in becoming an interventional endoscopist. For that, we're spreading all across the Europe to Milano, where legendary master of HPB endoscopy, Professor Paolo Arcidiacono, runs an HPB endoscopy unit and a fellowship program. Buonasera, Paolo.
Buonasera. Thank you very much. Too kind of you.
And also we're transporting to Poland, to Szczecin, where the brightest young star in endoscopy, Katarzyna Pawlak, shines as an interventional endoscopist and having just finished her interventional endoscopy fellowship in Toronto. Welcome, Kasia.
Yay, thank you so much for your kind invitation.
We're very, very happy to have you with us. So without further ado, we're dreaming of becoming interventional endoscopist, but maybe the dreams are empty. Are there any prerequisites for becoming a decent one? I mean, for instance, steady hands, steel nerves, daredevil attitude, or just a lot of patience, Paolo?
You start with the very, very difficult questions. And the answers could be very short or long, long, long. I think that you need everything. So this is the short one. But for sure, you must be very patient. And it's important that you follow your dreams. The road could be very hard to climb, but if you have the patience and if you follow your dreams, I think that the end you will arrive.
So we're talking both the procedural patience and also the long-term patience in your career, right?
Yes.
And Kasia, what's your special thing to have before becoming an interventional endoscopist?
Yeah, so I can see from a fresh finished fellow perspective. So I think, of course, having a great mentor like Paolo would be amazing. So it's always super important to have a mentor because the mentor is directing you in a good spot and is giving you a chance, is opening doors because it's your mentor. It's also your somehow sponsor, somehow ally, right? So we are looking for that when we are trying to do interventional endoscopy, but also persistence and commitment. Because if they see that you're working hard, they will definitely appreciate that and they will help you to get what you want. It's always a win-win situation. So it's very important to do that. And if you target a mentor and person who can show you and teach you, then you can be pushed forward. Then they will find out the best your skills. They will give you feedback. They will shape you, but also they will direct you what procedure you're good at. Because sometimes we are not good at everything, right? So we have these mentors and experienced people who see what we can do and what we can continue, right?
Yeah, that's very important. You said, Katha, it's very important what you said about the fact that, and that's important, is not everybody could perform any kind of interventional endoscopy. I think that if you are not predisposed to perform EUS or ERCP or ESD, it's not an issue because you can be a good interventional endoscopy to perform POEM or full thickness or nodes. It is important that you follow the advices of your mentor.
So you have to be humble.
No, it's not so easy, and it's not something that leads you to a success if you are trying to do something that you are not predisposed to.
Yeah, and I think also, like Paolo said, of course you have to be really patient because it will take really sometimes a long time. Nothing is given to us like that. Sometimes you have to just find your way. You have to find a good place. Of course, skills will come with the training, with the volume, I think, because the volume will decide about your skills, right? Of course, you have to be capable and somehow know and feel the scope because some people, they don't feel the scope actually, right? They don't have these technical skills. But what I found, if you have this persistence and patience and mentor and everything combined, and then you understand this, you are aware of upcoming complications. Of course, you have somebody who will support you, but then entire personal attitude is really different for therapeutic endoscopy than for the rest, I would say, things in GI.
So you have to take your losses with stride and, let's say, stoicism. If you don't do procedures, you won't have complications.
Exactly.
Absolutely. You must learn from your defeats, from your losses.
Sometimes even it's just nothing to learn, right? It's just things happen.
Yeah, it just happened. But then sometimes when we are especially very young and we see all superstars like in our experts like Paolo is, right? They are doing amazing procedures. It's going so easy. So we can percept that, oh, it's just, what is he or she doing? It's so easy. But then if you're facing this by yourself alone without a proper training, it can be really bad for the patient. So you always have to think also about the patient, right? Not about only doing therapeutic procedure because it's fun. It's so, like you want to be famous, you want to do such cool things, but then it's patient, right? So I think everything together is coming when it comes to the skills and personal attitude to perform therapeutic endoscopy.
Okay, so you really do need to have a lot. And actually having right and a left hand are not the most important things then maybe. Okay, Paula, coming to where we are slowly moving towards, to the training. In comparison to North America, we are at the beginnings of structured, focused fellowships. And you lead one of those rarities in Milano. What motivated you to design a program dedicated to HPB endoscopy?
I want to hear that.
No, the motivation started many years ago. Our fellowship program started more than 15 years ago, probably. And the first motivation was that I had to, because I'm very old, I started my training in US in endosonography in 1992. So at the time I was a fellow and I had no trainer. So I started by myself. And the only training that I had at the time was I had a big training in transabdominal ultrasound and endoscopy. So I had to combine those. And it was a long run, definitely, with a lot of defeat, a lot of, enthusiasm and so on. So at the end, I said, okay, I need to do something because... if I want to have a team, I need to be able to train. So the training starts from your team. And then after the team, then we decided to build a structured training program because we had, at the time, we had the numbers, the case mix, and the skills. Somebody said that we had the skills.
So it sounds like you had a very trial and error kind of path to where you are now, and you did not want others to go through that.
Yes. But I must tell you that it was really exciting at the end. I felt very, very well. But this is something that I always tell to my fellows, never think to know that you are able to do everything and you know everything. I personally always learn something every single case that I perform.
Okay, so having said that it's passion for teaching and building your own team that started this, what do you think is crucial when preparing fellows to hold their own in decision-making and these very high-risk interventional procedures?
I think that the most important thing that you must teach them is that they are not doing only a technique. You're not teaching a technique. You can teach a technique to anybody, but they need to be trained in the whole HPV. So then, as Katarinska was telling before, they need to know the indication of the procedure. They need to know the contraindication of the procedure. The most important thing that you must learn is not when to perform the procedure, but when not to perform the procedure.
Definitely.
This is very important because it keeps you away from disasters. And another important thing is to be aware of the complication. And you should know how to treat the complication. You cannot perform a therapeutic procedure if you are not able to treat the complication of this procedure. And you should know also who can help you if you fail. And this is very important. There are other experts who can help you. There are other experts that can perform other procedures that have the same results of your procedure. I think about my radiologist. I have the great team of interventional radiologists. They can solve the problem if you have a problem, or they can perform the procedure if you think that the procedure is not indicated in US or ERCP and so on, but it's better to perform by a radiology, interventional radiologist. And also, you should know when the patient should go to the surgeon.
So you're basically talking about complex decision making in a difficult situation and seeing from all the angles.
Yeah, but this is important that you know in advance before starting your procedure. You should have clear in your mind why you are doing this procedure. So the clear indication. Then you must have in mind a strategy. So a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, and then help. Okay. But you should have everything in your mind, because then also when you perform the procedure and you see that you are not gaining success in the procedure, then you should know when to stop the procedure. Because as Katarzyna told us, you are treating a patient. So you must do the best for your patient. So you should not be, so enthusiastic and so, proud of yourself to continue to force something. You must be aware, okay, the time has run. I am not succeeding in this procedure. Then I need to do something else. And maybe something else is to ask to another expert to help you to perform the procedure, or to move the patient in another department to perform another kind of procedure to help him or her. To teach the technique that you can teach endoscopy to a monkey.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, one of my best friends, and I do not know if I can tell you, he was a consultant at the King's College, London, and he was a pathologist and a pathology. He is a pathologist, and he always telling me, okay, ERCP is a monkey job.
Really?
Yeah. So you can teach the ERCP to a monkey, but the most important thing is that everybody, if you are willing to be an expert, you should know everything around. This makes the difference.
Yeah. So maybe you can't teach a monkey patient-centered complex problem solving and contingency planning, most probably. Okay. And coming from that, Kasia, from a recent fellow's perspective, you're fresh out of the docs from an interventional endoscopy fellowship in Toronto. Why did you think it was necessary for you to take this opportunity up?
Because sometimes, I think especially in Europe, like Paolo Center is unique. We have to say that. There is no therapeutic endoscopy fellowship at all that doesn't exist in Europe in the most of countries. So you can count maybe on one hand where you have these centers with excellence. Actually, you cannot get there normally. And in Poland, this doesn't exist. So you sometimes feel that you're hitting the ceiling, right? So you cannot get more from your center, and you want to do more because you finished some particular steps, and then you feel that maybe there is some space you even can go, but maybe you don't have such a lot of time and you want to learn more or less, I would say everything, but try to do all procedures. And I found that in North America, especially there, you have all these therapeutic fellowships where you can finish in 1 year or 2 years a therapeutic endoscopy fellowship, and you can actually try to learn and do all procedures, because these fellowships are unique, right? It's not only hepatobiliary, of course, would be super appreciated if I would be able to do first hepatobiliary and to upskill myself in very complex ERCP and to do more, but I also love resections. So to me, it was about trying more or less everything. And that's why I was looking for center in North America. But in the United States, for us, to me, at that time was not possible because you have to be certified and so on. So it's very, very complicated. And I found about Canada that actually it's possible. There are different requirements, but the style of the fellowship is similar like in the United States. But it's much easier, actually, let's say, to us, because you don't have to be certified. You don't have to do recertification of your board. So that's why I, by accident, found about Toronto, and luckily I get there.
So basically, your motivation was a huge hunger for advanced endoscopy.
Yeah, definitely. And good volume, because you also have to go to the center where it's a good volume. Because if there is no volume and you have I don't know what's in Paolo Center, how many fellows, Paolo, you have during the one fellowship year?
At the moment, we have two in HPB.
Oh, so you have, exactly. So you have great volume, you have two fellows. There was three to four fellows. So I knew that you have to be in a very good spot with a good volume for all procedures, more or less. So that's why that was my motivation. Good center with a good training, with good trainers, with ability to do hands-on, because sometimes, you know, some training centers, they do not offer hands-on. And good timing, because 6 months is too short. 1 year is good, but they offered me to do 18 months. So that was extra timing to continue, right?
To prepare to do those things on your own, right? Be comfortable.
Yeah, and especially that, as Paolo said, technical skills is nothing. Then you have to start thinking about what you're doing, why you're doing, what to do when you have complication, what equipment you're using, because you also have to learn equipment. Sometimes people don't do that and they just do the procedure. But then when you're by yourself, you have to decide about the type of the sand, about the type of the balloon, about what to do, what even guide wires use and so on. It's very complicated in hepatobiliary. So you have to not only look at the procedures, setting up the diathermy and so on, but also equipment. And then after, take a look at the patient, what's going on with the patient, why we have this elevated aminotransferase and so on. So it's very complex. So you have to take a look at everything, not only skills, like Paolo said, but every detail from the performing therapeutic endoscopy.
Okay, so you touch on the timing. So I would like to ask, what's the difference? Short focused visits versus structured fellowships. Can we attain the same expertise through dedicated hop-ons to different centers and then training back home without leaving our lives for an extended commitment, for instance, 18 months? Paolo, what do you think?
I think that if you are a fellow, you're willing to start your training and so to acquire some kind of expertise, I think that a fellowship, it takes at least 1 year. So you need to spend 1 year in the training unit. If you already expert or skilled in a procedure and you want to, you know, improve your skills in part or more expert part of the procedure, then you can also try to find out the possibility to go just for a spot. But to me, the spot is at least 2 or 3 weeks, because particularly if you are looking to learn interventional EOS. Interventional EOS is not ERCP, is not EOS. So if you look to big centers in Europe or in the United States, the numbers are not so high. So if you want to be able to look and to perform one or two cases, you need to stay at least 2 or 3 weeks in the unit in order to be exposed to these cases. So those are two ways to learn, but referring to two different levels of expertise.
Okay, so it goes back to the numbers. You have to have those to train as a monkey the technique and then train your mind.
It's like training for a competition. If you do not train every day at least 3 or 4 hours a day, you cannot win a competition. if you're playing tennis and you are not Djokovic or Sinner, so you're not this golden hand, so you're not touched by God in your hands. I think that you need to train at least, and they who are champions train every day 4 or 5 hours a day. So if you want to become an expert, maybe not a champion, but a good expert, then you need to be trained a lot. So I agree that somebody said, okay, the numbers are not that important, but the quality of the training is important. And the quality, how to perform, you perform and train the trainees. But if you don't have cases, or if you don't have enough cases, how can you train the trainees? If your unit performs 10 procedures per week, these are not enough.
So basically, endoscopy is a sport, and Michael Jordan would agree with you. He trains most of all.
You know, there was the sentence like, crazy dreams take crazy effort, and this is like that. So like Paolo said, I think we sometimes misinterpret the volume also, because the volume is, of course, the volume because you want to have this technical skills, but the volume is also cases. So different cases. So you will be even sometimes have this large stone, or you will have this stricture, or you will have different indications in different cases. That's the volume, because aside of teaching yourself skills, because dealing with large stone or doing spyglass or anything else is absolutely also, I would say, very technical skill, but as well volume. So your expertise is growing up. So your skills are growing up, not only these technical ones, but also integrative and also cognitive ones, right? So, and also regarding the timing, I just want to mention that, Paolo, of course, I agree with you, but also there is one study, I was very interested with that. There's one study about the US, like diagnostic only US, that it's showing that you're capable to diagnose super simple things like subepithelial lesions and perform basic EUS in 6 months. But if you want to diagnose really properly hepatobiliary and pancreatic diseases, you need 12 months with biopsy and so on. So I think these studies are coming from something. So volume, of course, I agree with that, with timing and with everything, but it's everything combined.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the problem of the number obviously depends also on your skills. If you are a talented or not talented fellow, there are studies from the United States where that fellows who reach the expertise in very few examinations and others who reach the same expertise after hundreds of examinations. So from the trainer point of view, we know as a trainers and experts since the beginning who among our fellows will need more cases and who would need less cases. But the mean number should be a big number.
Exactly. Unfortunately, it's not a good news.
Yeah, especially for Eastern Europeans. Okay, so if we agree that endoscopy to some degree is a sport that needs passion, but also to be a hardcore interventional endoscopist, do you need to be an academic? Paolo, what do you think?
Not at all.
Whew. Relief!
I think that you need to be a physician.
Exactly, you need to be a good physician. Relief, Paolo, thank you.
No, absolutely. And also, I don't think that all good training is performed in academic centers. I don't think so. I think that you need to follow, to have a look of the centers regarding the expertise of the trainers and the expertise and the numbers performed. Just an example, we all know Mark Giovannini. Mark is one of my best friends. Mark is not working in an academic center, but probably is one of the most important pioneers in EUS and therapeutic EUS in the world. And he has trained a lot of fellows. And I am academic, but there is no need to be academic at all.
I can hear the sigh of relief from the audience hearing that.
Exactly. I have to say that it's a huge relief. And thank you, Paolo, for saying that, because we from our perspectives, we have mixed minds, I think, when we are making the decision. And then I feel that we are really confused about it because we, on the other hand, like from the one perspective, we want to be a good researchers and do excellent research and so on. On the other hand, we want to do therapeutic procedures and do great, great procedures and crazy procedures and then feel very brave and accomplished. But I feel that also both these things requires timing. And if you want to, like you said, be really skilled and be a good therapeutic endoscopist, you have to do this volume, like we're saying, but you don't have time because in Palo Center, you work like 12 hours. I can say that. I see my friends, they are really working long time. And I had the same in Toronto. We were working really a long time. And then you are super tired. Like you want to extra read about procedures, read about how to do that and read cases and also study a bit because you also have to study. Not only do you have to go to the literature, you have to go to the books. There are some dedicated books for ERCP. And then you want to be focused on that. And I know also my friends, like Enrique de Madeira, he's amazing researcher, but he's doing many research, right? So I think, and I agree with Paul, that you have to pick up. Of course, you can make your observations and then sum up and publish them or conduct some studies, but I feel relief because I always was very stressed about that. Oh my goodness, I have to do research. But then on the other hand, I want to do therapeutic endoscopy. And then, but yeah, it's difficult. So you have to pick up.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to point out something because when you do and you do in your practice and you perform a good practice and you have the numbers and you have the case mix and you, I think that doing clinical research, if you have this, is not easy, but it's possible. So I think that is not also doing good clinical research is not an only an academic issue. If you are working in a good clinical environment and a good clinical unit, then you can also perform research. Doing research is something that keeps you on the edge, and so you can perform also a better work, a better activity if you do also research in your activity. As Catherine said, Enrique de Madeira is a great research. In my team, I have Gabriele Capurso, who is probably one of the best pancreatologists in Europe.
Oh, of course. I forgot about that. Sorry, Gabriele.
He is, you know, part of the team is doing research with him, you know. But the clinical activity is something that gives you the opportunity also to perform a good research, and not because you are academic.
What you talked about, it's 360 degrees of seeing the patient in context of clinical case and literature and what's going on. What can you offer? And also shout out to Enrique and Gabriele. And we could do it today much more, but we have to end at some point. So to end with, if we have the technical abilities, if we have the passion, if we have the dedication and perseverance, do you have an advice for a person trying to get into an interventional endoscopy?
Being really committed. And I always tell to my fellow, don't allow nobody to tell you that you cannot do this. If this is your dream, if this is something that you are willing to do, this is what you must do. So nobody can tell you you cannot.
Hold your ground if it's your dream. And Kase?
Yeah, and make this effort, absolutely. Like, try to make this effort and don't give up and try to find a good place because place and people will let you reach the stars. And if you will find one like I found in Toronto, then like you will feel like the best person in the world because you're working with really people who want you to be there, and you also feel we're very well welcomed. So you have to be really motivated, and you have to know what you want, and this will lead you to this place.
I think I agree with you. The most important part of your research is to find out a good mentor. Somebody who is willing to teach you.
Okay, so it sounds like the future is bright. Thank you so, so much, Paola. Thank you, Casa. It was incredible talking to you about the future of becoming interventional endoscopist. Thank you for your time and thoughts that you shared with our audience.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for joining. We'll see you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.